Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 and howdy, everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Monday, September 17th, 2018, and I got something in my throat. Sorry about that, guys. Hey, welcome to the show. This is a live opening from your host, Scott Fullerton, and I'm going to have a great couple of replay guests for you here in just a little bit. But if you missed them, you're going to love them. If you've heard them, you're going to want to hear them again. I hope you guys had a fantastic weekend over the weekend. I had a great time here in Northeast Ohio. The weather was absolutely beautiful. I went to a wedding on Saturday for my second cousin. And if you haven't checked out my social media, you need to go do it at Left of Straight on Twitter and Instagram, and the Left of Straight Show on Facebook, or my personal page, Scott Fullerton. If you have not experienced a Northeast Ohio cookie table, you are missing out, my friends. It only happens in this region of Ohio. It's like it doesn't happen in Cincinnati. You might see it in Columbus. You might see it in Cleveland. But in the Northeast region, primarily along the PA border, we do what's called a cookie table at every wedding. And this is where all the relatives and friends of the bride and groom make cookies the night before the wedding and bring them for everyone to partake of as part of the wedding reception and to take home. And it's sometimes in lieu of the cake, it's sometimes in addition to the cake. But we went yesterday and there was at least 20 kinds of cookies, a jillion trays and backup trays in the back. So that was always fun. It was a beautiful wedding. It was an outdoor wedding. And my second cousin, Brett, and the love of her life, Patrick, had an amazing wedding, and it was so great to be part of it at this outdoor wedding in the beautiful area out here in Northeast Ohio, overlooking a lake and a big field, and it was like an open bar and great food and all sorts of fun things. They did some really great things for the wedding that I hadn't seen done and some things I'd seen done before. It was a great time Saturday. I did kind of tease a little bit. On Thursday, I went out on a quasi kind of not really a date, but a first time meeting, we'll call it, which led to a second follow-up meeting yesterday that's been kind of positive. I'm still a little apprehensive, but fingers crossed. Guys and girls, I need all of your 10,000 plus fingers crossed for me that this might go to a real first date in the next week or so. So that was kind of fun part this weekend. And then also on social media, some amazing sunset views last night. I was driving home from my second quote-unquote meeting with my quote-unquote friend, and it was a perfect night. The sunset was beautiful. I ended up driving an extra half an hour just so I can take more pictures and look at the sunset. I drove past my house and ended up having to turn around and come back a half hour later because it was just gorgeous out last night. So that was a lot of fun. I hope you guys had an amazing weekend as well. As I said, in just a few minutes, I'm going to do a couple of replays for you. At first, I'm going to play my buddy Steve Grand. If you don't know Steve Grand, he's an amazing singer and songwriter. He just came home this weekend from an entire summer-long residency in Provincetown, Mass, where he performed 3 or 4 days a week. And he just debuted his brand new album, Not the End of Me. And this interview was done just as he arrived in P-Town at the beginning of the summer. It's right before I left on my big gay road trip. He had not done one of his shows yet, but the album was just coming out. And if you haven't listened to the new album, it is an amazing sophomore effort, and I loved every bit of it. So we talked to him about that and everything going on in his life right now. And then after that interview plays, I'm going to play an interview with Guy Branum, who is my new favorite comedian, one of them. I have so many comedians that I love. But Guy Branum, if you've not heard from him, he hosts a show on True TV Network. I know no one's ever heard of True TV Network, but if you go to True TV Network, it's called Talk Show the Game Show, executive produced by Wanda Sykes, producing and starring Guy as the host. And it is a show where the celebrities come out and they are contestants on a talk show game show, and they are rated by how their performance is and how their interview goes. And it's hilarious, lots of fun. And he also has just wrote a new book called My Life as a Goddess, a memoir of unpopular culture. And it's a hilarious and thought-provoking book. He's just one of the funniest men on the planet. I love him. So we did this interview right before the book came out, right before I left for the big gay road trip. So I'm going to replay both of those today for you. And other than that, not too much going on. I want to give a big shout out to my sponsors. Of course, we have Tony Guadagnino at www.tonyguad.com. That's TonyGuad.com. He does all my social media posting on Twitter. And as if you need a social media help, Tony's the person to go to. And also True FM Media out in Columbus. I'm going to be starting to do the show there very soon. I'm going to talk about it as part of tomorrow's show on Tuesday's live show. We're going to be talking to True FM Media a bit. And I might even have a guest from the studio call in. We'll see what happens. But we'll talk about that a bit. And tomorrow on the show as well, I'm going to have Adrian Christian, who's a fantastic singer that I met while on the big gay road trip. And he'll be calling in tomorrow for a live interview as well. So lots of stuff that like that going on. Nothing super exciting in the news LGBT-wise. Of course, we have this Judge Kavanaugh thing happening, and I don't do too much politics on here anymore, but I will be starting up Standing on My Soapbox, my weekly Wednesday rant, rave, review show, the first Wednesday of October, bringing special guests to co-host with me as we talk about everything politics. If you are a politic geek and love to talk about politics as much as I do, even if you're not on the progressive or democratic side as I am, I love a good debate with people. Please come on the show and talk with me. You can reach out to me on social media and tell me you'd like to be a co-host on the show. Again, it's called Standing on My Soapbox every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. So that's always a lot of fun. So let's get right to it, guys. I have a couple new interns that I just hired. They'll be coming on board soon. We'll be doing, I'm looking for some new shows. If you're thinking on hosting a show, reach out to me. If you think you have a show of interest to the LGBT community and our allies, please reach out. But let's go ahead and talk to my buddy Steve Grand. First, we're going to play one of the singles off of the new album. It's called Walking. I love it. I love every song on here. Guys, this is Steve Grand and Walking. I'll be back in between interviews here in just a little bit. Have a great afternoon.
Caught up in the lights, cameras in my face. Where did we go wrong? Why'd you walk away? I know I let you down. Promised I would change. Ain't so simple now. What else can I say? I'm down. Thank you.
Guys and gals, that was the first single, Walking, from my first guest today. He became a viral sensation when his self-produced music video, All American Boy, came out and went on to become a standout in the music scene as an out and proud LGBT singer and songwriter. His first album resulted in one of the most successful Kickstarter campaigns in music and gave him the control and responsibility to really be able to do it his own way. He's now back with his second album, also released on his own label, and the anticipation's been mounting pride. I'm so excited to bring him to his first interview on the Left of Straight Show. Please welcome Mr. Steve Grand. Steve, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing very good. How are you doing, Scott? Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. I know it's a very busy week for you. We got an album coming out. Thanks for taking the time to call in. I know you just arrived in P-Town for a great summer residency, which I want to talk about in a little bit, but how you survived the drive up there, and are you getting settled in a bit?
Yeah, let me tell you, it has been a crazy couple of days. Last year I did the drive myself as well, there and back. I pack everything into my little Prius, and it's about a 16 and a half hour drive from Chicago to Provincetown, and I do it straight through because I have too many valuable things in my car. Like, I don't even like to stop. So
sure.
This year I was doing fine, and then about an hour and a half out at my last stop for gas, I blew a tire. So I had to unload everything and get the donut out and fix the tire. I was so, you know, I'd already been driving for 15 hours. I was exhausted. It was in the middle of the night. It was about 2 a.m. and it's just like the last thing you want to deal with. And so I fixed it right there, and then I was back on the road. And so the whole trip ended up taking like 19 hours, and I was so like sore and out of it for the next day. I think just because of the crappy food and sitting in that same position and just staring at the road for that long, it just it could drive you nuts. But, you know, as I say, I'm just
sure.
happy to get there safely and sound and, you know, so ready to start my summer here. I'm just finally getting settled in, and this is definitely, I couldn't think of a better place to spend my summer.
Fantastic. I agree. I haven't been to P-Town in like 10 years. I need to go back, especially this week is Bear Week coming up, I think, and I'm definitely a Bear League kind of guy. So you should have a good time had by all, I think, down there. And you'll be there all the way through September, I think.
Yes, September 7th is my last show. I played 3 days a week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I have my show did, you know, so well last year and I didn't have a great time slot. I played 7. So they moved me now to the 9:30 and 10 p.m. time slots. So I think it'll be even better this year. And I've obviously my new album coming out. So I think it's going to be a really successful summer. I really have focused myself more on how I want to be as a performer. And I've been practicing a lot. So I really am feeling more confident as a musician and a performer ever. So I know that I'm going to do a great job. So come to P-Town, everybody. And even if you don't
there
go to my
go.
Show, honestly, I'm such an advocate of this place. I don't have enough good things to say about it. It's whatever you want to make it. It could be relaxing. You could go out dancing at night. You go to the beach. You go to the pools. Just walking around, you know, the quaint little commercial street. It's just beautiful, and everyone's in a good mood and positive. The place to be.
Well, like I said in the intro, this is actually your first interview on the show, And I don't expect you to remember this, but it's actually the second time you've been on this show and the third time we have talked.
No, I didn't realize that.
Well, I got to tell you, you were with our great buddy to the show, Trevor LaPaglia in L.A., and I had him on for a second interview on the show, and you guys were having lunch, and he was
wanting
to take a bite of the sandwich, so he handed the phone off to you.
That is right. Okay, I absolutely remember that. I remember where we were sitting and everything, so it's nice talking with you again.
That's okay. It's funny. I didn't expect you to remember me, but it was very funny. He was just, I need to take a bite of the sandwich. Here, why don't you talk to Steve Grand? And we had you on for a couple seconds, so that was exciting back in the day. Of course, Trevor being the interested in the Christmas song, so that was exciting stuff. And then I got to see you live in person when you came down 2 years ago to the Akron Civic Center in Akron, Ohio. You did a great little fundraiser help for one of our LGBT programs out there. And you and your band were so fantastic, did a great meet and greet afterwards. I got some merchandise signed from you that we gave out to some guests on the show that year. And so this is our third time in person, because I'm so excited for this next album to come out. But let's start from the beginning, since it's your first time on the show. Talk a little bit about growing up in Chicago. I'm sure a lot of people know you by now, but talk about growing up there and what was your first interest in music?
Yeah, well, I say Chicago. I was born in the city, but I grew up mostly in the suburbs, in the south suburbs of Chicago. And I started playing piano when I was 5. I saw Charlie Brown, and I was just hooked on that character Schroeder with this little piano.
Oh,
I just thought that was the coolest thing. So our parents had us start taking lessons. We got this old upright piano. Then I was about 11, 12. You know, you start going through adolescence, and, you know, your hormones are going crazy. And I started to, you know, feel the need to write music and express myself. And music became my outlet for that. And really, ever since then, I've wanted to be a singer-songwriter and be able to sing the music that I wrote and make people feel the way that my artists, when I was growing up, made me feel, and give people a sense of hope and create an experience for people, create a world in the fantasy of the music. It's something I've wanted to do since I was a little kid, and I've been working at it ever since then. I went to Belmont University for 1 year did some music stuff there, but it was expensive, so I moved back home and just started playing at bars in the Chicago area. I had like a regular gig at this place called The Joint, and I was like the piano guy there. I learned a lot about performing just by doing it, and you know, some nights you would bomb and like be mortified to leave the stage, and it would just make me want to practice more and get better. Fast forward to 2013, I finally, without a manager or a label or anything, I released my first song and music video on July 2nd, 2013 for All American Boy, and it just went viral in a second. I was on Good Morning America and CNN within that week, and I was, you know, absolutely nothing before then. I was just a kid that had made the song in my basement and got some friends together for the music video. So it really was a totally kind of overnight success story. Although I had been working on music for a lifetime before that. It's been an incredible ride since then. It's been the ride of a lifetime, and there's been a lot of good and a lot of bad, and it's definitely made me stronger and wiser as a person. And so I wouldn't have it any other way. I've released already my first debut record, came out a year and a half after that in 2015. And now I'm talking with you 5 years into this journey, releasing my long-anticipated sophomore album called Not the End of Me on Friday.
I'm so excited to be talking about all that, because I really have been such a fan for such a long time. And then one of the things I heard about you early on, which I loved, if true, I mean, didn't your dad or something tell you how music told stories of his life and were like place markers for things? And that kind of one of the reasons that inspired you too? I love that your dad had a big part of your music as well.
Oh yeah, he really did. For all our differences, my dad really influenced me to want to become a musician. I remember we would be listening to the oldie stations when we were growing up in his big red van, and a song would come on and he would turn it up, and you know, then he would turn it down to be, you know, to talk over it and say, oh, I remember when this song came out, and me and Ricky Roth were, you know, in eighth grade, and you know, I was dating this girl, and all, you know, all this kind of thing. He had such incredible details, and it just like it didn't matter where we were going or where we were driving or what was happening. It just, like, I saw the amazing ability of music to transport people to a place in time. And that's really one of the first
nice.
Things that got me hooked.
Now, talk a little bit about coming out. You came out relatively young and not even on your own terms, it sounds like, to your parents. Talk about your coming out experience just to yourself and what made you decide to be an out artist instead of maybe hiding that back when you first came out on the scene.
Well, I realized I was gay very suddenly when I was 13. It was kind of like I had this huge aha moment, and it was terrifying to me. I always felt that I was different as a kid growing up. I just thought I was like different and more sensitive and an artist. And I didn't really,
right.
I didn't have a sexuality when I was like a little kid, obviously. But then
sure.
When I was, I think, yeah, 12 or 13, I was at Boy Scout summer camp. And there was this camp counselor there who was older than me. You know, he was like 15 or 16. And I remember just like just wanting to be around him. And like, he took a liking to me and was just really like friendly and cool with me. And I just thought it was cool that this, you know, older guy, because I was 13, that this older guy was paying attention to me. And I felt special and it felt really good. And I remember when I had to leave, I was like really, really upset. And wasn't letting anyone know, because I somehow instinctively knew that it was like that whatever I was feeling was not totally appropriate or normal or
sure.
whatever. So I kept it to myself. But I remember just feeling absolutely heartbroken to leave. And I realized that like he didn't feel the same way. He just thought of me as like a friend and someone that was coming through camp. And, you know, I'm sure he liked me and all that, but it just wasn't, you know, there wasn't that extra something there. And it was for me. And so on the whole drive home, I like really thought about it, and I was really depressed and torn up about it. And it dawned on me that like, whoa, like I have an attraction to this guy. Like I want his, like, his love and his attention, and like I want him to be sort of like a boyfriend. Like that's how I'm feeling about him right now. And then I realized I was gay and
right.
it was scary and blah blah blah.
I hear you. I was YMK summer camp for many years. I understand how that went. I kind of had some of my own awakening there, so I know where you're coming from. But I thought it's very brave to be an out artist. I mean, this is 5 years ago, and there was some out at the time, but there wasn't as many that were relatively mainstream at the time. What made you decide to be an out and proud artist?
I mean, I just didn't really look at it as an option. I always thought that, well, I'm a singer-songwriter and I'm an artist, and I like to tell personal stories in my music, so there's really no way around that if I'm going to be singing about
right.
love and all that kind of, like, I just never, I always like, well, if I'm gay, then I'm not going to try to hide it. So that was kind of my thing. Like, I wasn't like thinking I was doing anything brave or like that. I just was like, this is the way it was going to be for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump into that first song and album. I mean, I just can't believe how you handled it so well with all that instant rush of fame. It kind of reminds me of the way Adam Rippon has been going on through the Olympics, but his was even a slow build compared to you. You were like overnight, bam. How do you prepare yourself for that at 25 years old?
Well, you don't. I mean, looking back, I don't think there was any way to really prepare me for that, and really no one in that situation. I always tell people, you spend your whole life trying to figure out how to make day one happen, how to get your break. And
right.
when that finally, if you're lucky enough and that does happen, you realize that, oh, crap, like I spent no time thinking about what to do on day two or day three. And so it's like all this extreme years of preparation for this one thing. And then once you're in it, you're like, all right, well, actually I'm not prepared for any other stuff. And yeah, I definitely did. It's, you know, nice of you to say I handled it well. I did my best. I didn't always do a good job. I don't get too down on myself because again, it was my first time, but it's just been a growing
sure.
and learning experience for me. And so I like to think that the mistakes I have made are ones that I've learned from and have grown from and become a better person because of.
Nice. So you financed the first video, and actually it came out exactly 5 years ago yesterday. So big congratulations on that. But
that's right. Yes.
It's either the first or the first that I know of music video features the same sex attraction.
How big of a leap of faith was that, and that kind of money on your first video? We haven't even reached marriage equality yet. Where did that confidence come that if you spend all this money on it, you might have something, you might be onto something?
Yeah, well, I definitely wasn't like the first to do anything like that. I mean, I never liked to take credit for that. Like, I know it was done in some instances before, whether or not it blew up as big as mine or whatever. So yeah, like I don't want to take credit away from anyone
right.
else
no,
that's come
you.
Before me. But what gave me the confidence? Well, I was quite confident that it was going to do something. I spent $7,000 making it, which was, I mean, all the money in the world to me as someone who is just making $100 for a 2-hour set on Friday and Saturday nights. I really didn't have very much
sure.
money at all. I lived in a tiny studio apartment. It was all the money in the world. Like, I had no way of paying back that $7,000. That was like the most money I'd ever spent
right.
on anything. But I don't know. I just felt like I was ready to really take some kind of leap. I had turned 23 and I was like, crap, I'm not even like technically college aged anymore. Like, I really need to, you know, I'm not on a record label, like, you know, X, Y, and Z hasn't happened. So I really just got to try to do it for myself here. Like, I got to just try to make it happen for myself if no one else has come along and helped me. So that's what I decided to do. And I was just like a monster in the fact that like nothing was going to stop me from telling this story and making this video. Like, I just didn't care what anyone else thought about my idea. I was so convinced that it was the right thing to do. And I wanted to tell that story so badly from an emotional and personal standpoint. It was important for me. And then also the fact that it was going to be what I hoped would launch my career. So I just put everything I had into it, and it made me kind of crazy for a while, just trying to make like, because so much was on the line. I mean, just if someone had like canceled
right.
or if, you know, like, oh, we can't do it today, or if it rains or something, like, I would have been screwed. I just got, you got to count you at some point. There's a great deal of luck that comes into play, and things just worked out for that. And even things that didn't, we made it work. So yeah, I mean, you just got to go for it at some point. Like, there's nothing, there are no guarantees.
I think you're right. I think you have to have that confidence in order to be successful. I think that's what most of the success people are, have that confidence, and you have to take the chance too. So I think that is amazing. And now you decide to do a Kickstarter campaign to finance your own album. Kickstarter was really in vogue at the time, but you go on to have one of the most successful ones in history for music at that time. Tell me about that experience, and then kind of having to realize, oh yeah, I have 5,000 people supporting me and I have all these perks to do. That had to be a little scary in and of itself. But talk about the Kickstarter
yeah.
experience.
Yeah, the Kickstarter was amazing. I did that in 2014, and that was another thing that just was like an overnight success. I had reached my goal, I think, within the first 24 hours, I reached my goal. It was overwhelming, and it put a lot of pressure on me to like really get everything done right. And I really set a high bar for myself and like what I promised people. And I did my very best with getting everything done. But I just remember I was so stressed and so anxious. I'm a person that like, I hate to let people down, especially people that believe in me. Like it was terrifying, because when I had to delay the release of the album, I just felt so responsible. And, you know, there were a few people, you know, like a very vocal minority of people were upset that I had to delay things and stuff like that. And I just didn't have a way to process that yet. I just wasn't mature enough to just understand that, well, okay, you know, Steve, people are going to feel how they're going to feel. And you know that you're doing this with as much integrity and care as you possibly can.
Sure.
So it really was like I really let that stress me out way too much for a long time. Cause I took it very seriously that people put their money behind their belief in me. But all in all, that ended up being a big success, and you know, the album went on to do pretty well. And, it's all good. It's another part of my history.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And I think I remember at the time, I've been a huge fan and follower since the beginning. I remember you trying to get those little smelly markers out and doing all that, and you were letting people know every step of the way. And I think that's why people had such faith and respect for you, because you were working your ass off, and you can tell that it was a lot to do and a lot to take control of. Talk about that for a second, too. Now, all of a sudden, you're 25 years old. You've been doing singing in church gigs and joint and things like that. Now you're an overnight business. You've raised all this money. You have more money than you ever thought before, but now you're a business and you have to figure out how to work on all that. How do you wrap your head all around that at the same time? That had to be kind of crazy.
Yeah. It felt like just constantly drowning. Like I was just like trying to tread water, and like the ocean was just getting bigger and just like more water was being added every day. And I really was feeling more and more overwhelmed. And I think it's one of the things that I say was a contributing factor in the fact that I started to abuse alcohol for a while, because I was just looking for any kind of escape or any kind of, you know, anything to numb myself, because I felt so much. And now I was a business and I was really in control of everything. And when I did the Kickstarter, you attract all sorts of people that want a piece of that. And I when you have no point of reference for money or finance, it's tough. I mean, I had people around me, and I had people like pushing me to always like, you know, ask for more and do this and this, but it's like, I'm the one that had to actually fulfill all those rewards at the end of the day. So
right.
A great deal of like, people are all happy to like cheer you on and like help you do all that. But when it comes time to like, I'm the one that actually has to like do these damn Smelly Marker drawings. And, you know, I had to write songs for certain fans, like write songs about them. And there was a lot of crazy stuff that I think I just overwhelmed myself with. And that was an important lesson for me too, that like, you know, it's when you say, oh, you know, I'll get to it. When you keep saying that, and when you keep saying, oh, well, you know, this is a lot of money I'm making here, so like, I'll just have to get this done. Like, you got to take the whole picture into account. And I just didn't have a point of reference.
Definitely.
At the time. It just took a lot of learning and a lot of growing. So I much more like have this mentality of slow and steady wins the race now. I do think a lot of my success in the beginning has been because I was maybe overly confident. Like when you're that young, you just like, you know, I was at that perfect age where I knew just enough to like, and I had just enough energy to like be intense and crazy. But I also had, you know, the right amount of blindness just to like really, really go for it. And over the last few years, I think
gotcha.
I've really just kind of like, I am more even keeled now, and I'm not so intense, which is good, because you can't live forever at that level of intensity, because when you're living intensely, then, you know, the highs are so high and the lows are so low, and it wears you out. And I just had to, I had to mellow out a little bit, and it's been a wonderful thing. I like a lot being older. Like when people say things like, oh, you've aged. And I'm like, well, good. Like, that's a good thing. I mean, I'm, you know, we all should. And, you know, I definitely, I'm not,
right.
Yeah, I'm not the same as I was 5 years ago. And, you know, my looks won't reflect that. And it's like, yeah, I've been through some shit, and a lot of that shit I put myself through, but it's all good. And I'm happy where I'm at now. So.
Well, I want to talk about that with that too. I mean, your album's doing quite well, but you're giving back to the community this entire time, which I want to talk a little bit more in a second. But you find yourself right in the rise of social media back then, and trolling starts to come about. They take your modeling all out of context. You're basically becoming gay clickbait for a lot of these sites. How is that to get through? I thought you held your head quite high during that, but there's got to be some breaking points along the way. How was that whole social media thing to deal with back when it was first really breaking?
Right. Another thing that's overwhelming, and the fact that it really is something new that humans in our, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of like being in our current form as Homo sapiens, we've never had to deal with having so much input from strangers, like be so readily available
right.
at our fingertips. Like most of us, when we go out on the street, we're like, most of us are relatively cordial to each other, and you don't tell everyone exactly what you think. You don't say the most brutal thing to their face, but social media has changed that. So I think that we're going to have to continue to evolve as humans to like understand that we're going to have to make a special room in our brain to process social media, because it could really just, I mean, it could destroy you. And it was devastating for me for a while. Like when people are saying something, it really feels like the whole entire world is jumping on you. And it's really hard to have a sense of perspective in all that. And there's some things I think I handled well. Other things, like I think the pressure got to me, and I behaved in a way that I'm not proud of, and that I don't think reflects, you know, where I'm at today.
Right.
But I did the best I could at the time. And yeah, I mean, I don't begrudge anyone. I think I just had a lot to learn. And if it all happened again, if I had to start it all over and do it again today, like, I would handle certain things differently. But, you know, I'm at where I'm at now, and I'm good with that.
Well, let's talk about any funny stories. Got to be crazy dating time there. You're trying to get music out, and I'm sure people are throwing themselves at you left, right, and center. I thought you were high class going to the Marine Ball with Corporal Tanner White. That had to be kind of a highlight for you. But any really crazy stories of dating time while you were there? While you were going through
that was a really nice time. I mean, the one thing I've kept quiet about is my dating life. I haven't really gone into that, other than I'll talk about stuff that happened after the fact, but, you know, I won't say whether I'm like currently dating or not. It's been interesting though. Like, when I haven't been in a cause I've spent most of my time in a relationship. So when I haven't been, you know, I've had some crazy times where I've really let loose, but that could be scary and overwhelming for me. So, just cause there are so many, like, there's so many options, you know, like, there's just, it's can be overwhelming. And just walking into a place with like a lot of gay men, like here in T-Town, I was really struck by like, oh wow, like there's all these, like, you know, there's all these good looking guys around again, and, you know, you catch people looking at you and things like that. And it's exciting, but I'm like a pretty anxious person. So like, I have a lot of social anxiety, so it more so like freaks me out. But I think sometimes it's good for me to push myself out of my comfort zone and like try to meet people. But overall, like, I've accepted I'm a pretty quiet, introverted guy, and I'm not on the apps. Like, I'm not on any of those apps. So I think that's not going to get all
smart man
get kind of crazy. So yeah, it's just like, I'm focused on a lot of things right now, and I find that stuff could get in the way. Like, I feel like I've had my fun, but now I really want to just get back to really making something of myself and maximizing my time and efficiency.
Good for you, man. Well, let's jump into the album in one second, but first I do want to get back to that, your social awareness and giving back to the community. I mean, you've been so good of going to Pride every summer between when you first released it through now. You've gone out this summer. You've worked with the Human Rights Campaign, the Anti-Violence Project, GLSEN Respect Awards, Out and Equal Work Advocates. You've been such a great pillar in that, the community. What has that meant to you? Giving back, how does that fulfill you and help you keep going on?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't want to take credit. Like, I'm not just doing like all of this for charity. Like, a lot of stuff I do get paid for. I've done a lot of charity work, but it's also part of my job. But being, you know, being a voice in the community is something that's been important to me from the get-go. I mean, I am a part of this community, and I strongly believe that everyone should have the freedom to be, do, and say whatever they want. I'm very kind of a, you know, just maximum liberty kind of guy. And I think that showing people just the truth of who you are is a powerful thing. Cause maybe if some people aren't sure how they feel about gay folks, you know, they all takes us sometimes meeting a couple that are pretty decent, and, their minds are changed pretty quickly. So I think there's just a great power to being out and open, and, you know, that's the first part. But the second equally important part is, like, you know, being a decent human being while being out and open. So I try to, like, always, you know, hopefully get better and better as I move through life.
That's fantastic. Well, it's time to get on to this fantastic new album. We're actually pre-taping this, so you have 3 long days for this to debut. But we're going to air this on Monday after it's come out, and I'm sure it's going to be a rousing success. Let's talk about the other side of the break, and let's play out the title track to the new album. This is Not the End of Me by Steve Grand. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Space on the side of your bed. I'm sure by now you found some bowl to fill it with. It seems right now know loneliness like an old friend. You come around, we share a cigarette. That's not to say that you haven't sent a fan, but if I had a heart to start, you would have told.
Guys, we are talking to Steve Grand. That was the title track, Not the End of Me, from the new album. Congratulations, my friend. These 3 days are going to be agonizingly long for you. Are you excited?
Yes, yeah. I'm more excited than anything. I was just saying that I'm feeling a great combination of like being really content but also really excited, whereas maybe in the past I would feel like overwhelmingly anxious. I just feel like I'm in a really good, solid place in my life, and I made a record that I think is really beautiful and solid and has a lot to offer. And now my fans are going to finally get to hear it. My fans who have been, you know, so incredibly patient and supportive, I cannot thank them enough. So, yeah, I'm just so happy for this to be out there. It's just like, really is like pages from my diary, but I'm ready for people to hear.
That is amazing. It's going to be this Friday, the 6th. The pre-order has been going on now, 12 tracks. plus three alternate versions of a few of the songs I think is fantastic. I got to tell you, I've had the first album on repeat in my car since you announced last month that you're having the new song out. And now you're how I judge by where I've been traveling so much this month. I'm here in Northeast Ohio. I haven't had to go down to Columbus about four times. It's exactly 2.9 songs of Steve Grand's album to go to Columbus. It's like 1.3 songs of an album and three songs to get to Pittsburgh and 1.5 songs to go to Cleveland. But I have all your words memorized now, my friend. So I'm ready for the second one.
I love that.
We're
good
to
go.
You'll have to figure out
the new points of reference and how long, you know, it'll take you to go from point A to point B.
13 to 15 tracks, I'm going to be able to go. It's going to be even less. The
how many
ratio
rotations?
Is going to be lower now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's some long songs in here too.
It is, and they're great. I mean, I feel a little special here. Thanks to you and your publicist there, I got to listen to the entire album. I'm going to be the hit of my 4th of July party tomorrow. I just want to let you know ahead of time. We're going to have a little pre-party just for me and a couple of close friends.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. I feel free to, you know, to play it.
We are going to have some fun with it. And I'm just excited for you because this is a very, like I said, you've always been a storyteller. I think storytelling is your best feature along with that great voice of yours. But these are some personal tracks, and you've even said it's a little somber in some places. But tell me what this album meant to you in writing these songs over the past year or so.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything is it's an eclectic mix, but every song is a snapshot of where I was at a certain point in time. And writing every song in this album was really an exercise in catharsis. It's very personal. Again, they are just like pages from a diary to me. Every song deals with something different that I went through and experienced. So some of it does get pretty heavy, but I think overall there's like this thread of resilience that's in all of it, and that's what I want people to take away from it.
Nice. And what song on the album do you think came the easiest to you, and what came the hardest for you to have to relive to write it out?
Well. I'll say that number three, Disciple, that's probably a song that's most personal to me on this record. It's definitely a favorite of mine. Writing it was very cathartic. I really felt like I relived everything that I went through when I was writing that song. It's kind of about a relationship that I was in that had ended at the time. And it was the longest relationship I was ever in. For over 7 years, we were together.
Wow.
And it was a long, tumultuous ending. And so there's a lot of anger and pain and sadness on that track. Mm. And just a lot of conflicting moments too, conflicting emotions too. Like you feel like you still love someone, you still care about them, but you maybe resent them in some ways too. And I think that song beautifully captures that. It's a song that when I still listen to now, there's certain lines where I just will get the chills because it's still just like it rings so true for me. And I like to think that when you make something that personal, that like it will still be able to speak to a lot of people, because people know when something is authentic and that personal and that deep. And I think that that's a hallmark of a good song, something that's so deeply personal at the same time it's very universal.
And I think your voice has just grown so much more mature. I mean, you've always had this amazing voice. The first album always surprised me, especially after listening, like I said, and repeat so much the last month. You can go anywhere from a U2 sounding start to you've had those country moments. You had this great rockabilly sound. How has your voice kind of gone through with you? What are your feelings on how your voice has changed? I don't know how to even word it the best way. But how do you think your voice has grown?
My voice has always been like the hardest part of this whole thing for me, to be honest with you. I'm always like the least satisfied with my voice, and it's so difficult to record because I struggle to be objective, and I'm really very critical of the way that I sound. But I would say that that's gotten better and better. Like I've really just, the more I've accepted myself as a person, it's like I've also could mirror that acceptance with how I've felt about my voice. Like my voice just, as I get older and more mature and it's used more, just kind of, I accept what it does and I feel like what it does, it continues to do better as I use it more and really try to take care of it. So I have a much better relationship with it now than I ever have. And I just hope it continues in that trajectory, because it's like, I feel like just, as much as you always try to sound like something, it's at the end of the day, it's like everyone just has their own unique voice. And it's just about like accepting that, you know, your voice may not be everything you want it to be, but it's going to be different and it's going to be your own voice. So you got to, it's like a love hate relationship.
Gotcha. No, I love it. Like I said, I've listened to most of the tracks on this album now. I think it sounds a little more mature and it's just a little more melodic. I love the first album though, because you were just, there was such a good diverse of the songs on that one that it was so much fun to listen to. But this one just has the maturity about it, which I really enjoy a lot. Talk about, you've always been so good at making these amazing videos. I mean, you put so much time and energy into them. The look of them is fantastic. The way they're shot. I love walking. Talk about, you know, video process for you. What's that like? And what do you see as some of the future videos maybe off this album?
Well, it's a lot like writing a song in that, like, there's no one way to do it and that it's always kind of different. I would generally say I have to have some kind of idea and some kind of like story that I want to tell, or else it ends up just being kind of like hodgepodge. Like my video for walking, like I feel like I didn't have like a very clear vision there. So it just kind of ended up being like a fun kind of silly thing. But I feel like what I do best is like when I have a very specific story that I want to tell. And so I think I'm going to go back to doing that and just doing whatever it takes to make those videos, and probably try to make less videos, but like really give them my all again.
That's awesome. Great.
Yeah.
And talk about, what are your thoughts now? The music industry is so hard, especially for independent labels or independent singers like yourself, that people are kind of even stopping the whole album process and releasing just singles a couple times a year. What do you see yourself making more albums in the future, or how is the music business changing to you? Because you've always been such a hard worker in that, just working out on the field, or taking your music on the road and then producing these albums. What's the future of music for you look like?
I still really like albums, but my problem is that like I just take too long with them. So I said it was going to be my goal to release another body of work, like again next year. I don't know if it won't be like very long. It like might just be 5 or 6 songs, but I still really like the idea of an album and just like a collection of music that's, it's just like a, it's like a full chapter, you know, it's like a whole chapter in my life. And so I like that. And then I like the art, and I just like having something tangible. I am old fashioned. And I think that a lot of my fans are too. Like I really, even like one of my managers, like, oh, like, don't make a booklet, because it just makes everything cost more and it's just more work with like art and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, but I want people to be able to like open the pages and like read the words that have them written. And like, I think that,
I love that. Yeah.
there's probably a very small percentage of people that will ever even notice that. But I like just doing that. Whenever I hear someone after a show, like, you know, saying that like, oh, I love being able to follow along, I'm like, oh, that makes it worth it. Even if it's just a couple people every time, I'll spend the extra couple cents, which, you know, obviously adds up very quickly. To make sure that happens.
Awesome. That's great. Now, you had that fantastic collaboration with Eli Lieb, Look Away, a couple years ago. Any dream collaborations for you, or anything coming up, or who would be a dream collaborator with you to do maybe another song with?
God, I'm not sure, because I'm always like, people that I like, I'm like, I don't want them to upstage me. You know, like I always just think
you
that
can
I'm
hold
like,
your
oh,
own, my friend.
Me.
Trust me.
No, like they're better than me. You know, it's my own
silly man.
Psyche,
silly
maybe,
man.
But I don't know. Honestly, I'm not like super excited about collaboration. I really just kind of like to do my thing. But but then I think like, oh, what, you know, I did with Eli, that turned out so great. So I probably should push myself to continue to collaborate.
And we had so much fun with All I Want for Christmas. And, of course, my good buddy Trevor was in that. Do you have any surprise genre songs you'd like to try that you might scout every once in a while? Was that fun for you to do?
Yeah, that stuff is fun for me. So we'll have to see. My mom really wants me to make a Christmas album. Like, that would, and like, I don't know that I want to do that, but I just know it would just make her life.
You gotta,
so I don't know. Maybe I'll
once while. Yep.
Have to do that.
That draws,
yeah,
hard,
exactly,
on you, my friend. That's, yeah, a tough thing,
so,
to put down. I can understand that.
Yeah. But I just, you know, I'm like, I love other stuff, like, you know, Christmas and holidays and like just all that really sweet kind of family sitting by the fire stuff.
There you go. Well, you have, tomorrow is 4th of July. You're one day away from your debut in P-Town this Thursday. What are you going to do tomorrow? What's going to be your big 4th of July plans, my friend?
Well, I mean, I would love to just, like, sleep because I'm just exhausted. I sweat through my sheets all, like, through the night last night, and I, you know, I was really not feeling well. And I really think it was just because my body was like, Steve, you need to stop. Like, you're not stopping, so we're going to make you stop. I think that was But I will want to get around tomorrow. I just want to make sure that people know that I'm in town and know to come to my show. And so, you know, probably more for that reason. And I do have a lot of people that I know that are here in town, so I'll bounce around a bit. You know, it does, like, being social takes a lot of energy for me because I just have I'm a, you know, a cranky old man at heart. But I'll get out. And, you know, we have this thing. I have to do my 4th of July picture, like I do every year in P-Town. You know, I joke around with my friends because we've made it a thing now that we, like, do these, you know, we all wear, like, American flag Speedos and, like, just are ridiculous. So.
Right.
So we'll have,
what
we'll
was
do
that thing you did while you were jumping in the freaking lake and, like, for a while? That was kind of funny too. Whenever you jump into that damn lake, you're a crazy man, my friend.
Yeah. I guess.
Well,
in
I hope
ways.
You have a good time. I did see a little quick social media post you had today. You got to get into the rehearsal space today and have a little rehearsal time. Do you like the space? And tell them where you're going to be in P-Town for the next.
Absolutely, I love
months.
It. The Art House is a magical, magical place. And I think I just found out that it might not be. I don't know if it's. Well, I'm not going to even say, but come to my show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I play at the Art House, which is at 9:30 p.m. on Thursday, on Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday at 10 p.m. It's across the street from the post office. It's a magical place, and my show is magical, and it's going to be better than ever this year. So, really, come and stop by the box office, pick up your tickets. It's a beautiful time.
Well, you are magical, my friend. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know it's been a very busy week for you, and you have a lot more to come, but I'm so excited for you. Like I said, I've been a fan from the debut of the single way back in the day, and I just think you're a great human being, so thanks for being you.
Oh, thanks, Scott. I appreciate that very much.
And just for anyone that has been living under a rock, give everyone your website and your social media so they can give you a follow. And Where is your album going to be released at? Where can they find it on Friday?
Well, shop.stevegrand.com. People could get my album and all the merchandise. I just have released a bunch of merchandise. But really, first and foremost, social media. Follow me at Instagram and Twitter at Steve Grand Music. I'm on Facebook also, as if you just search Steve Grand. I have the blue check mark by my name. Don't be fooled by it. I have a lot of issues with that. So I do have the blue check mark on Instagram and on Facebook. Not on Twitter yet. Still figuring that out. But, go to those places. And I do a lot of stuff on YouTube. So youtube.com/SteveGrandMusic. And I just want to give one last shout-out to my fans. Thank you guys for being so supportive and patient these last couple years. It's been the journey of a lifetime. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And that's thanks to them.
Well, you are a great person to be a fan of. I think you're very good to the fans. I appreciate all your touring you do. I look forward to seeing what's coming next after this great album. Stay on the line for me. Guys, we're going to play out today with one of the other songs on the ground. This is Don't Let the Light In. We're listening to the fantastic Steve Grand. Catch him in P-Town till September 7th. You won't regret it. You're listening to Let the Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
I've grown used to the plane rides,
fresh linens on my king's house, baby, and sleeping alone. If I didn't take a trip home, start drinking in the morning. New city, same story, always this club or that. Someone give me where my boy's at. Before you came along, I never really saw how empty I'd become. If you'll just give me the chance, I'll leave it in the past and you'll be my only one. We don't have to go out just 'cause it's Friday night. We can just stay here, do whatever you like. It's the car downstairs, nobody has to know. We'll turn the cell phones off, leave the radio on, and you'll dance real slow, baby, but please don't stop, just take my hand, this night don't have to end, if we don't let the light in, just don't let the light in, oh, 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 oh. Just give me the chance, I'm gonna be the man, the one you know I was. We don't have to go out just 'cause it's Friday night. We can just stay here, do whatever you like. It's the car downstairs, nobody has to know. Go out just 'cause it's Friday night. We can just stay here, do whatever you like. Ditch the car downstairs, nobody has to know. We'll turn the cell phones off, leave the radio on, and you'll dance real slow, baby. Please don't stop, just take my hand.
Alrighty, guys, we are back. That was my interview with Steve Grand, and just right before 4th of July weekend, before he started his P-Town residency and his new album came out. I really do love the album. As you heard in there, I kind of use Steve Grand to judge how far things are, and this album is bigger, so it takes me less repeats of songs to get to Columbus than it did before. So a big shout out to Steve Grand. Thanks for being on the show. We'll have him back real soon. And I may be taking the show to Chicago for a couple of days. And we'll try to get him on as a live guest. That'd be a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and jump right to it. Next interview is a little shorter. It's only about 25 minutes. It's with Guy Branum, who I think is one of the funniest guys on the planet. He's so fun, has the best laugh. And I love his work. I love Talk Show the Game Show and this new book I read my first week in Palm Springs. Loved every second of it. Confessions of a Goddess, memoir on unpopular culture. And it was a great interview. We did this right before I left for Palm Springs as well, right before the book came out at Barnes & Noble. So listen here to Guy Branum. And I'll be back in a little bit, and we will wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Left to Straight show right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we are back. So, guys, how does a guy go from a conservative family in Northern California who went to law school and even lobbed comedy death threats to opposing college rival Chelsea Clinton turn to one of the funniest out-and-open writers and television hosts in America? Well, I have just a guy to tell us about it, from appearing on such great shows as Chelsea Lately and Totally Biased with Kamau Bell. It's his hilarious turn on host of True TV's talk show game show that got me rolling in the aisles. Please welcome to the show for the first time, the hilarious Mr. Guy Branum. Guy, how you doing today? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. But let's be clear, I didn't lob any death threats. My statements many years ago were misinterpreted as death threats because of a poor editorial choice on the part of a journalist.
And we have to read the book to find out more, I'm sure.
I know, but I like that you're making a scandal out of things that'll get more people paying attention. That's all I'm worried about.
There you go. You always need a little clickbait here and there. Welcome to the show, my friend. It's great to meet you. You have one of the
good
best laughs in show business, by the way. I love your laugh. It is fantastic.
You're very sweet. There are times when it is truly annoying, like listening to Talk Show the Game Show during edits. It's just my laugh booming out so much, and the editors have to be like, can you cut it down a little bit? This seems like a bit much.
That's hilarious. Well, I got to tell you, I told you off air a second, I'm a horrible radio show host. I always have this electric amnesia where I forget about guests for years at a time. And I knew I saw you on Chelsea and everyone else, but then a good friend of mine, Emerson Collins, said, I have to watch this talk show, The Game Show. And I had not seen the first two seasons, and I just became addicted, my friend. You are one of the funniest men on the planet.
Well, thanks. Emerson is a really great guy and a really great actor. Talk Show the Game Show was just an idea that I had, that people should score points on talk shows for doing the kind of thing you're supposed to do on a talk show, like name dropping or plugging your projects. So I turned it into a stupid live show. We did it around LA for a couple of years. And then finally True TV was like, hey, let's turn this into a real TV show. And it's been super fun. We've had lots of great people on it. Charles Barkley, Marissa Jarrett Winoker, who are other famous people? Oh, Tiffany Haddish. Tiffany Haddish told her story about going on the Swamp Tour with Will and Jada Smith on my show months before it happened on Jimmy Kimmel, but no one noticed when it was on my show because, you know, it was on a part of cable no one's heard of. But, you know, it happened
here. The high side of the
dial. That's what people need to know. I mean, at the end of the day, isn't it always just straight people co-opting gay culture and making it look like it's theirs?
Thank you. That's what I'm screaming. Well said.
Yeah.
Let's start with a little bit. I kind of hinted to your background. Give a little bit of this. Talk about these early years. You're growing up in a conservative family in upstate California there. Talk about that. What brought law school on, and spill a little tea?
Yeah, I grew up in a tiny little farm town about an hour north of Sacramento, which is a city that you learned in fifth grade for your state capitals, but have no idea where it is. And I just wanted to get the hell out of this, like, stupid, boring, anti-intellectual farm town and just anywhere where I would be around sophisticated people. So I spent my whole life trying to just learn about the outside world, and then the minute I got a chance to go somewhere else to college, I was like, well, I didn't go that far. I just went down to Berkeley, but it was enough. but I was like still closeted and self-hating and self-doubting. So when I was done with college, my mom, who is sort of, you know, like aggressive in the Jewish way, she was like, you have to go to law school. And I was like, but maybe I don't want to go to law school. And she's like, no, you have to go to law school. So I went to law school. Then I came out of the closet and realized that this life I had planned wasn't a life I wanted. And then I started trying to figure out how to do stuff that would be more fun for me.
There you go. Well, at least you have a good understanding of libel laws now in your comedy. You can put some use, so mom's dollars aren't poorly spent.
It's very important, though. I have to tell you, ever since I finished writing this book, I am just terrified that I accidentally missed something and said something that someone will sue me about.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well,
let's hope it isn't
so
you.
Much great work. Well, I like it. I like it. You gotta be a little, like we said, controversial in the beginning, and maybe it'll just bring more reviews and more people to the book. Anything that sells is a good
let's
thing,
hope.
My friend. And since we have a little bit of time today, because you are just busier than heck, you're writing all the time, you're working on all these different shows, let's do a little Reader's Digest points. Talk a second about your podcast. You have a lot of fun with Pop Rocket. How did that come about? And talk about that a bit.
So a friend of mine, Jesse Thorne, runs Podcast Network. He heard me spouting on about something in pop culture somewhere, and he was like, you should probably do a show where you talk about this on a regular basis. So it's me and a diverse panel of commentators. There's an academic, Karen Togson. There's a novelist, Margaret Wappler. There's a digital media strategist, Winna Mitchell. And every week we just sort of go over pop culture from that week. It's called Pop Rocket. And it was really influential in the book because an editor who I didn't end up working with, but who listens to my podcast, was like, you shouldn't just write a memoir. You should write a memoir where you sort of talk about the way that pop culture and stories from pop culture influenced and guided your life. And I ended up doing that, and I think it turned into a book that was really a better reflection of my story than if I had just tried to write, bad David Sedaris fanfic.
Gotcha. But that's cool, though. You never know who you're going to meet and how they're going to influence your life. That's one of the things I like best about this world is you never know where the intersections are going to lie. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how often do you do your podcast,
really cool.
And where can they find it?
My podcast is weekly. It comes out every Friday. It's on the Maximum Fun Network. But if you go to iTunes or anywhere and you just Google Pop Rocket, it'll come up and subscribe and get a little dose of me and the rest of the panel every week.
Nice. And then let's go on a little bit about your comedy album, Effable. We can talk about the cont in a second. I just want to know how you get these models to come join you in the pool. I need to do that for my podcast here. I'm jealous hell.
The thing is, gay guys traditionally haven't been that excited about gay men doing stand-up comedy. We usually prefer watching women, be they straight or gay. We love Amy Schumer. We love Nikki Glaser. And I was just trying to figure out, how do I get gay guys to pay attention? And, what I've learned from Courtney and Query or Toll Road or any of those places is that you have hot people taking their clothes off. So I just did a photo shoot. I had a friend who was a really good photographer, and he got some hot guys to put on swimsuits and hang around a pool, and we just shot some stuff. And then it ended up being, I think a beautiful representation of the world as it exists in my mind.
There you go.
I used the same tired strategy for the book. I posted a video of hot guys sort of grinding on each other and holding my book. And I posted that to Twitter, and then I tried to promote it, and they wouldn't let me because they said it was pornographic. Because gay guys in swimsuits
You're
touching
kidding.
Each other is pornography. Right. Yeah. It's
oh, my
very,
God. I think that's what all the YouTubers are complaining about, that all the LGBT content for just having two guys without a shirt on is now labeled pornographic. They're getting so kind of ridiculous these days. It's not even fun.
People don't think about it, but because we don't have any gay male sexuality in mainstream films or in mainstream television, we really are sort of trained to think of it as only being pornographic. And I think it's possible for us to sort of move along and grow up as a group, as long as we're still being construed as being these sort of disgusting transgressive things. We have to be able to show affection, and not just in chaste Will and Grace ways, but the way that straight people do.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I am of the Rubenesque type body type, so I've always had the face for radio myself. But anymore, you have to add a video element to it. I'm actually going to, when I come back, I'm going for a big gay road trip from out here in Northeast Ohio to Palm Springs, California. I'm going to do live shows for 4 weeks in California in August. And when I come back, I'm going to actually start going to a studio in Columbus, Ohio, and doing a video streaming along with the podcast. So I'm scared as hell to get my chubby little cheeks on the thing, but I'm going to try to find to surround myself with some cute guys like you did. I think that'll work.
That's really fun. I did consider when promoting this book, I was like, should I just do like shot for shot remix of Anthony from Queer Eye's Instagram? Because he's always posting photos of himself for no reason in underwear. And I'm like, I should just do the same photos and then we'll see how much attention I get. But when are you coming to Palm
Springs?
That
would be hilarious. Oh my God, do that. And then talk about how good of a cook you are at the same time doing those poses. I love it.
Oh, I mean, I have seriously considered doing a YouTube series where I just correct the mistakes that Anthony has made on Queer Eye. Those are, like, we could do an entire podcast just about how messed up, like, his macaroni and cheese recipe was. But when are you coming to Palm Springs?
I'm going to be in Palm Springs. Actually, I'm going to try to sneak up. I get into town on the 4th of August, and I know you're playing the 5th in L.A., so I'm going to try to sneak up that day. But I do my show live every Monday and Tuesday from the Indulge Gay Men's Clothing Optional Resort every Monday, Tuesday live for the entire month of August. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Palm Springs is so much fun.
If you're in town, you should come down. I know you're going to Petaluma the second half of the month, but if you're going to be there early, drive on down. It'll be fun.
I will try to make it. I mean, look, it's a little hot in Palm Springs in August. I'm a bigger
Thank
fan
you.
Of November.
That's why I'm getting the free room for a month, guy, because it's August in Palm Springs.
But it's still a good time. Palm Springs is always a good time. When you're in the water, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. I'm going to try to do a poolside. I'm going to try to live stream it. I got fun people. I got Jason Stewart coming down and Frank DeCaro and Jim Colucci and all sorts of fun people. It's going to be a fun time had by all. So if you're in town the first couple weeks, I'll give you an invite.
Well, Jason Stewart and Frank DeCaro, I mean, there is this rich world of really, really great gay male stand-ups who have existed for decades that we just don't talk about, who, like, really didn't get the attention or love that they deserve. Those guys were both, like, huge heroes to me. Watching Frank DeCaro on the Daily Show back when he was on it was
sure.
so great. And I just, you know, I look forward to a time when gay men can continue to, like, love funny women, but can also learn to, like, love and enjoy stand-up from other gay guys.
Exactly. And I don't know if you worked with him while you were on Fashion Police, but Tony is also coming down. Tony Tripoli, of course. He's going to be in town for a couple of days. So he's going
to
come up.
Tony is the most fun. He's delightful. How I was supposed to have a boss with an ass that big and, like, remain professional, I don't know. I don't understand.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That is so cool. Well, I will off air, I'll give you the deets, and if you can get down there before you head up to the beautiful Petaluma, California for your shows, we'll have you on down. It'll be a lot of fun.
That would be super great. I'd love to come. Yeah,
go ahead. No, I just
go
thought
ahead.
One of the funniest things I love, because I love doing so much research on all my guests, and so I go through everything. I go through your websites. I go through all your social. And, of course, I go to Wikipedia, and my favorite part of you in Wikipedia, under personal life, it just says, Guy Branum is openly gay, period. It's like, how are we supposed to interpret that? I was like, going to the gay bars, bell the ball at the summer pool parties, harness and ball gag at the fetish club. It's just, it's so random and so incomplete. You have to fill us in.
Well, I really think that we need to clarify this openly gay thing. I think you should have to go to West Hollywood City Hall and file some papers, just so that we know absolutely it's on the record. It is very funny that it is still placed in those terms, or that, like, as somebody who was never really closedly gay, I don't really understand it. And I get that everybody's on their own journey. I just wish it were more normal in entertainment to have people whose gayness was able to be a part of what they do the whole way through. It didn't have to be this journey of you sneak in while you're in the closet and then you come out and people are like, all right, well, we liked him anyway, so he can stick around. And it is, you know, lovely and inspiring to see more people like Billy Eichner who have always just been who they are and were never shying away from it, never scared of it. But yes, I try to keep my gayness as open as possible, but usually that just comes down to me forgetting to lower my blinds when I'm naked.
Oh, that is too funny. Oh my gosh. I love that. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the book. We only have 10 minutes left because you have to get back here. My Life as a Goddess, a memoir through unpopular culture. Tell me about how this came about and how long you've been working on it.
Well, I had a friend who recommended a book editor to me. He like got me talking to a book agent, and he got me talking to some editors. And the one editor I mentioned before, she was like, "You need to talk about your life, but you also need to talk about the pop culture that shaped it." And sometimes the culture that I like isn't the most popular, so that's why I called the book that. But it's basically. You know, as gay men, we don't really have structures for how we're supposed to, like, think about our lives. We didn't grow up seeing other gay people in media, or that many, or when they were there, they were objects or they were jokes. And I'm also, like, a fat guy, and, you know, fat people are, again, usually just jokes in TV and movies and books. And so it was really me just sort of, like, trying to step by step look at the culture that was influencing me at various points in time and like how shaped things. Like I talk about, I lost my dad like 2 years ago. I talk about my relationship to my dad through his favorite movie, which was a Western called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. I talk about moving to LA by sort of like counterposing Entourage and The Comeback as sort of like two separate visions of LA. But along the way, I am telling you stories of bad sexual decisions that I made and people who I pissed off and other human failures.
That is awesome. I can't wait to read it. I have my reserved copy at Amazon waiting to be downloaded on the 31st. I'm a little pissed the LA people are going to get to see it on the 30th at Barnes & Noble. Talk about this. I mean, you know you've made it when you're a Barnes & Noble wristband event. So talk about this little premiere you're doing on June 30th.
It's really exciting. I'm getting to do it at the Barnes & Noble in the Grove in L.A., which is – I have a story set there about this hot guy who would never pay attention to me being in front of me in line at a cafe – and me, like, being pissy and opinionated about what his conversation was, and then me being extremely wrong about the thing I was saying. And I get to tell this whole story, like, just scant feet away from where it actually happened. And that's thrilling. But everyone should pre-order My Life as a Goddess. It's coming out on July 31st, so if you pre-order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or any other sort of service like that so that you're getting it like mailed to you or shipped to you. Mailed. I sound 60. Like right when it comes out, you know, that increases my sales for the first week. And that really helps with traction for the book. So like pre-ordering would make me very happy. But if you just get it from your library, I should just be happy if people read my book, right? That's nice enough.
There you go. Well, I have mine pre-ordered, and of course, being a combination of a cheap-ass bastard and only able to read a chapter at a time in between events, I got the Kindle version, so I can just go on my phone whenever I need to. But it is available. It's a good price. I think it's like $24.99 hardback and only $17.99 for Kindle, or $13.99 Kindle, whatever it happens to be. So I have mine going to be downloaded right away. And I'm very excited to read it because it looks like it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
The foreword is by Mindy Kaling, and we did an audiobook, and she actually did the audio for her foreword, which is very nice of her. And then I read the book itself. So if you would rather just this just sounds like we're having brunch together, please consider getting the audiobook.
I love that. That's a great idea. And you had worked with Mindy before. You were part of her writing staff, and you were on the show a little bit, right? Or how did you work with Mindy Project?
Well, I actually met Mindy like 8 years ago when we were in a romantic comedy together. It was called No Strings Attached, and we played the sassy friends of the main character, of Natalie Portman. So we knew each other a little bit from that, and then one day I was writing for the VMAs, and I was really hating it because I had written the same Bruno Mars intro like 7 times. And then I just got a DM from Mindy that was like, hey, do you want to come work for me? And I was like, yes. And then I like was part of her magical show for like 3 years. And there's nothing better than being part of a show that's about a glamorous lady in the city. You get a lot of cute cupcakes at a job like that.
Nice. I love it. That is so cool.
She let me play a gossipy gay nurse. And like, really, I mean, the things you need to do as a gay performer in LA is like sassy gay friend in rom-com, gossipy gay nurse. My only hope is that I can eventually play sexually ambiguous teacher who helps a young man realize that he loves poetry or drama or something like that.
I love that. Some of your titles in your IMDb is hilarious of the way they describe your characters. It is exactly that, where you have the most obscure one line offs of what your character is supposed to be about. I think it's hilarious. Too much fun.
Also, I end up just being named characters Guy a lot, and I think that Tony Danza and I have a lot in common when it comes to that. Like, he's always just characters named Tony, and I'm always just characters named Guy. And I think that should tell you a lot about both of our acting styles.
Very down home, huh? Do you have can you play the Italian as well?
Yes, exactly. Next time I should play a Tony and he should play a Guy.
Exactly. There you go. I love that. Well, I'm so excited for this book. I wish I could get to Barnes & Noble. The Grove and Barnes & Noble is amazing. Oh, I got to tell you a quick story. When I went to L.A. last year, I came for a week and I brought the show. And I didn't do the show there, but I did have to do one show while I was in town. So I was looking, and it sets a podcast, right? So I can know where my computer's at. So I go to Barnes & Noble. I'm out in the balcony in Barnes & Noble at the Grove. And I'm a chubby guy. I'm not getting used to getting good-looking L.A. guys being hit on me. But because it sounded like I was an important person doing a radio show, I had this very good-looking guy come up to me and ask me what my show was all about. And then when I said I was a gay from Northeast Ohio, he took his latte and, like, beat it like a bat out of hell. But it was a pretty funny first-time experience at the Grove. I loved it. It was cool. Well, then, like I said, going to be – Go ahead.
Oh, the magnificent thing about Los Angeles is we have far too many hot gay guys here. We don't know what to do with them, and they don't know what to do with themselves. So they just end up trying to hit on anybody who seems like they might be slightly important, which is good for us.
Exactly. I'll take whatever I can get, my friend. Believe me, it's kind of fun. All right, well, we got to wrap this up here in a second. I want everyone to go out and get this book. It's going to be out July 31st. Everywhere. You need to pre-order now because we need to get those book sales up. You know, the number one New York Times bestseller. You also have a couple of concert dates coming up. You're going to be in L.A. for Dynasty Typewriter at the Hayward Theater on August 5th. Talk about that. What's that about?
Yeah, I'm doing two shows to just sort of, like, launch the book. I'm doing one at Union Hall. It is August 2nd, I believe, and then I'm doing a show at Dynasty Typewriter in LA on August 5th. So people can come out, have a good time, drink, laugh, and celebrate the fact that this book is coming out and have a good time.
Yay! I love it. I'm going to try to sneak up there from Palm Springs. It'll be a good time had by all. And before I let you get out of here, give everyone real quick the name of the book again, where they can get it, and give them where they can follow you on social media, my friend.
The book is called My Life as a Goddess. It's available everywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. And you can follow me on social media. I am at Guy Branum on every platform.
I always think you should be British with a name like Branum. I just say Guy Branum sounds so British to me for some reason.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, my friend, it was fantastic meeting you. I'm going to try to get you up at Palm Springs where we'll spend 2 hours together with all these other people and just have a blast. Thanks for taking the time to come to the Left and Straight Show today.
That was great. Thanks for talking to me. All right. I look forward to seeing you at Palm
Springs.
All
right. Well, stay on the line for me. We're going to play. Whoops. Say that again. What was that?
Forward to seeing you in Palm Springs.
Yay. All right. Well, stay on the line for me, guy. Guys, we're going to play out with a little music here. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed this replay episode of Guy Branum and Steve Grand. Again, Guy's book is available everywhere on Amazon, your local bookstore, request it. See, his album is available the same way. Please buy these. Don't just download them, guys. Please buy these. You can always listen to YouTube things, clips of things anymore these days. But support these artists and be sure to look for Steve on his next project as he gets home from a Provincetown. And Guy, hopefully we'll have a new season of Talk Show, the Game Show very soon. Tomorrow, it's an all-new episode, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'll be speaking to singer Adrian Christian, who has a fantastic voice, and was I met out in Palms. He'll be on the show, and then we're going to be talking about the move to Columbus. We'll be working with True FM Media, and I just was talking to them today, and we're getting ready to get that stuff all planned out, so we'll start adding video streaming to the show. So again, if you haven't followed me yet, please follow on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Left of Straight. That's at LEFTOFSTR and the number 8. On Facebook, you can follow the Left of Straight show, our page, or you can give me a friend request over at Scott Fullerton. Again, you can listen to the show every day here on Blog Talk Radio. You can subscribe to the show and always never miss an episode. You can always get the link that way. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Spreaker, all over the place. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you real soon. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.